and stuff like that, good times, Christmas break coming up. You overlook Thanksgiving most of the times because of that. But it's also just really fun to live with a bunch of little kids. I live with a lot of my nephews, and they get so amped about Christmas, right? Like, they don't care about anything else except for what they're getting. And I asked my four-year-old nephew what he wanted for Christmas. I asked Max what he wanted the other day, and somebody just asked me the question first off, and I said, well, I don't really want that much. I'm not really hoping for that much, but I would love, like, a snowboarding trip. You know, that's really all I need out of this Christmas season. And due to some awesome generosity and just a great gift, I'm actually getting what I hope for, what I wish. And I'm super stoked about it. Like, wow, a snowboarding trip. That's a lot of money. That's a big gift I'm receiving. But we asked my four-year-old nephew what he wanted. And I kid you not, this is what he said. He said, I want a fake banana. And I just looked at my sister, I'm like, what did he say? She's like, he wants a fake banana. He's been saying it all day. And I went and Googled fake banana, and sure enough, you can get a 97-cent fake plastic banana on eBay. It's like a thing. And you know what? He's gonna get what he wants. Right? I mean, like, whatever. I'm going to get what I want, and he's going to get what he wants. The thing is, he has no idea that there's way better gifts out there, way better things to hope for than a fake banana because he's four. Right? He has no idea, like, how much better it is to hope for a snowboarding trip in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, the best tree riding in the world, than it is for a plastic 97-cent banana. And I was thinking about that, kind of just like telling somebody, making fun of my nephew a little bit. And so often in my own life, like, I just hope for tiny things. Right? I'm going to stop saying plastic banana, otherwise I'll keep laughing. But like, I hope for such pathetic things in this life. Like, my hope is just puny. When I know out there there's greater things to hope for. Right? And I think that's the case for a lot of people here. I'm so convicted of this. My hope is so tied up in small, pathetic things of this world that I don't even know what I'm missing. Guys, I think we don't even know what we're missing half the time. I think tonight we need to have our hope restructured. We need to take a really good, hard look at ourselves. Ask the question, what is my greatest hope in my life? What is it? And this passage is going to tell us that there is hope for all of you. Let me pray really quick as just we dive into this text a little bit. God, I just need to confess, God, I'm just so, just so guilty of hoping for trash, man. I want people's approval, God. I want to be a good preacher. I want to be a good friend. I want just so many things in this world, God. I want money. I want success. And my life looks like it, God. So often am I finding myself not hoping in you. So often am I looking at myself like I have today, and I said, man, what do you hope for, God? Holy Spirit, we need you to come tonight and just change our hope. God, we need this text to speak to us in a way that's refreshing and convicting. That God, to people that are hurting out there, there is so much hope, and it's so simple. And to people who think everything is good, God, they have no idea what they're missing. I have no idea what I'm missing, God. Please just speak to us tonight out of your word, Lord. Your son's name, amen. We're in Romans 8 still. We're going 18 through 30. And tonight, it just, I had this phrase ringing in my head for a title of the sermon, just hope indestructible. Hope indestructible. And it came out of the first verse here. If you guys just look at verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth being compared to the glory that will be revealed to us. Paul is writing this as a man who has been to prison many times, for preaching the gospel. He's been beaten almost to death multiple times. He's been shipwrecked. He's been flogged. He's been spat upon. He's been rejected. He's given up all of his money, fame, and well-being for the sake of the gospel. And he's writing to people in Rome who, believe it or not, are burning alive as candlesticks for Nero. And he's saying, I do not consider that what you're doing or what I have done is worth comparing for what is coming. I do not consider that the present sufferings hold anything on the future glory that will be revealed to us. The suffering is real in this world, but man, I want to be able to say that more than anything tonight. I want to be able to say that nothing in my life is going to take away my hope. Nothing in my life is going to be able to shake me. Nothing will be able to shake me. Just like Paul said, but how do you get there? What's he talking about? Guys, he's not just talking about burning alive. I mean, we look at that, we're like, man, now I feel bad about complaining about my suffering. I'm not being burned alive. I'm not getting thrown in jail for my faith. Guys, I want to let you know that your suffering is real to God. And that whatever you went through today, he cares. Whatever depression you're fighting, whatever family member has cancer, whatever friends turn their back on you, whatever social loneliness you're feeling even tonight, God cares. He cares that your mom died of cancer. And there is hope for you. This text is going to say there is hope for you. For the social outcast here, there is hope for you in this passage. There is hope for you in God. My sister, she's an awesome woman of God. A different sister than with the weird kid. And her whole life, she wanted to just be a mom, right? She wanted to be such a good mom. She just was so maternal. She like pretty much raised me. And about a year and a half ago, her 7-week-old son went to bed and never woke up. And do you know what that did to her hope? Do you know what that feels like? Have you lost anybody that close to you? Because this person who's just wanted so much from this world is to be a mother and be the best mother possible, completely out of her control, her son dies. For no apparent reason, suddenly. And her hope, you don't think it was shaken. You don't think that messed with her a bit, that jarred her a little bit, that she had to question, what am I putting my hope in? Is there actually hope in this world? Everything's so unpredictable, just random stuff happening, stuff out of our control that we don't even know why it's happening. Is there hope in this world? There is. But the first thing we need to know is that this world, the world is a lousy hope. The world is an absolutely lousy hope. Keep reading. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subject to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. Guys, a long, long time ago, at the beginning of humanity, God created a beautiful garden. He created an absolutely perfect, beautiful garden where nothing was wrong. Oh, I wish I could just picture it right now, you know, just trees everywhere, plants, animals living in harmony together. I think they were talking, actually, and that's a side, but everything was just in perfect harmony, perfect joy, perfect unity. And then man sinned, right? We ate the forbidden fruit. We know the story. And sin entered the world. And for the first time ever, we were separated from God. And for the first time ever, we were confused in what to hope for. God cursed the ground. Sin had entered. Death now was on the scene. And the world was cursed for it. And nothing is the way it should be because of that. When we look at these beautiful mountains, it's just like, oh, it takes your breath away, right? If you guys ever hiked a 14er, it's like you get to the top and you're just like, or if you ever floated out into the Pacific Ocean and you're just looking at the sunset, you're like you can't even say anything, man. Do you guys watch Bob Ross? Raise your hand if you have not watched Bob Ross. Holy cow, I gotta change the sermon. Repent, go home, get on Netflix and watch Bob Ross right now if you raise your hand. You got a shirt on! Whoa, that's amazing. There's a Bob Ross shirt in the house. That was sweet. Bob Ross is a painter, right? And he was on PBS for like 20 seasons. He's with the Lord now. But he is the most gentle, quiet soul, and he painted the most beautiful landscapes you'd ever see. I mean, he talks you through it. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And when he's painting these, you feel like you're actually there. Oh, it's great, guys. You've got to go try it. But do you know what would be foolish? For us to look at that painting and be like, wow, Bob, this is everything. This is perfect. This is absolutely it. Because the only thing better than a Bob Ross mountain is the actual mountain that he was painting, guys. In the very same way, because of this brokenness to our world, because of this sin, this curse that's upon us, even when you get to the top of that 14er, even that mountain, even that beautiful creation is pointing towards something greater. This says that the creation was groaning, that it was expecting something. I think if Bob Ross's mountain on the canvas would talk to you, it'd say, no, don't worship me. There's like another mountain out there that I'm just like showing you a glimpse of. And when you get to that real mountain, I think if it could talk, it would groan and it would say, no, you're missing it. There's something way better coming. Don't settle for this. There's so much more coming. The creation's groaning, trying to tell you that. Guys, why is the world and everything in it such a lousy hope? Because the world and everything in it is crying out for hope too. You're like a drowning person. You jump in the deep end of the pool, you're like, shoot, can't swim. And you're like, help, somebody rescue me, save me, please. And you look over and the lifeguard chair is empty. You're like, oh shoot, help. And you look over and you see somebody else flailing right next to you. But the problem is it's the lifeguard and the lifeguard can't swim either. And you're like, lifeguard, help. He's like, you help me, man. The world is a lousy hope because the world is groaning for someone to help it. These mountains that we see are crying out, God, release us from this bondage. Sin be gone. Please rescue us. And so the world is an absolutely lousy hope. People are an absolutely lousy hope. Your boyfriend or your girlfriend, salt company, lousy hope. Because all of us are in the exact same boat and we are all desperately crying out for hope right now. That is the state we are in right now in this world. We need rescue. The passage goes on to tell us that the answer is very simple, and it's that Jesus is our only hope. Jesus is our only hope. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now, expecting, right? It's expecting something, not pain, of death, saying, oh, we give up, but it's expecting something to come, and what is it? And not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit. Even us Christians, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoptions as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For it is in this hope we were saved. And the hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Guys, Jesus came on rescue to this broken world. He heard the cries, man. He heard the mountains crying out, somebody rescue us. He heard your cries, somebody rescue us from our sin and our bondage. And he came and he lived the life we were supposed to live and he died the death we were supposed to die and he rose again 3 days later. The perfect sacrifice. The one who took the curse of this world and murdered it. Done. And he's saying, put your hope in me because I raised from the dead and I am promising you the same for yourself. before Jesus saves us. This passage, it's describing us as orphans. So before we are saved, before we just know Jesus on a personal level, before we put our hope in him and he saves us, we are described as orphans. But an interesting thing about this passage, you see, is it's saying we're still orphans. That can't be right. Because we sing all the time about, God, I was an orphan, lost at the fall, wandering away when I'd hear your call. And then he saves us. And we're not orphans anymore, we're children. But this is saying we are orphans crying out, we're waiting. Drew Stevenson, a pastor at church, always used this, this illustration. When he adopted his children from the Congo, Luke and Emma, they're in an orphanage in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and he legally adopted them. Right? They did nothing to deserve it. They did absolutely nothing. But somebody came up to them one day and said, Luke, Emma, you got a dad. And I can't imagine if they even understood it, what joy filled their hearts. But do you know the reality of that story? They didn't just look up and see Drew. They waited. They were fully adopted. They were children of the Stevenson family. And they were waiting in expectation for their rescuer to come and save them from the life they are living. Now, to contrast that, there was this interesting thing. I went to China last summer for just a little bit and met this really cool little kid. He went by Spider-Man. I don't know. English names. He went by Spidey, we called him. And coolest kid I knew there. And I get home, I check Facebook, and this lady wants to adopt him. I'm like, oh my goodness, my prayers are answered. This is awesome, sweet. And I see the dialogue start to go on and on and on, and she had fully decided to adopt him. She had done all the hard work. She had done everything she could, and they got to him. And they asked him, do you want to be adopted? Do you know what he said? No. My heart just broke, man. The dude had no idea the hope that was offered to him. He had no idea that rescue could come. He was completely content where he was, living in the orphanage. And all Luke and Emma Stevenson had to do when they heard that rescue was coming was put out their hands, man. And here came Drew. Long 40 days later, here he came to pick up his kids for the first time because they hoped in the rescue of their dad. Now we're waiting. We're just waiting. And what can we know while we wait? What good is hope if it's just hope? If we're just going to talk about this fluffy stuff all the time, like, guys, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. We need assurance, man. We need to know beyond the shadow of a doubt that what this is saying is true. And this passage goes on to do so. Look at verse 28. We all know this. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. No way. Well, then I must not love God enough because not everything works out for my good. You don't know my life, man. You do not know the pain that I go through, the suffering I go through, the apathy, the sin struggles, everything I go through. You do not know this because this is not true about me. Not everything works out for my good. Are you telling me you're gonna walk up to my sister and be like, hey, remember when your 7-week-old son died? That was for your good. Are you gonna be the one to tell her that? Am I gonna be the one to tell her that? When she reads this, what do you think she's thinking? Oh yeah, totally. Easy to believe. No. This is supposed to hurt a little bit. We're all in pain. We're all waiting for somebody to rescue us. We're all saying, can somebody just make this right? We're all waiting for that. And this is saying, the darkest days of your life, the best days of your life, and the darkest days of your life are all meant on purpose for your good. God is in control. For those who are called according to his purpose, for those whom he foreknew, before you were born, God knew you. Before you could hope in him, before you could turn away from him, before you could do anything, take a single breath, God knew you personally. He knew your name. He knew the pain you'd be going through. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. Before you were born, God already decided this person at the end of their life is going to be glorious. This person who's weighed down and burdened by so much pain in their life, I have decided already to bring them through it and make them happier and brighter than ever before. Just like Jesus. In order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those whom he predestined, he also called. Now that you're alive, what has God done? He's brought you here right now. He's called all of us from different backgrounds, from different ways. Whether it be you're just checking this out for the first time or it's your thousandth time here, I don't care. God brought you here. He's called you to hear his good news of his rescue. We are called by God. And those whom he called, he also justified. What that means is when you put your hope in Jesus, when you say, you know what, I can't see him, but I believe that no hope from this world or person in this world is going to match up to Jesus. I need him. Then you are justified, which means God sees you just as if you had never sinned. God sees you just as if you were Jesus. He sees you with the perfect record of his spotless son. And those whom he justified, he also glorified. Now, hold up. This is confusing all of a sudden. It says, all this stuff was in past tense. He'd done all of this to us. He's brought us here to this point. And if we put our hope in Jesus, he has justified us. But it's all saying we've been glorified. But if we look back at the verse that started this all off in verse 18, it says, the sufferings of the present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. It's talking about a future tense. Paul messed up. Great, all of this is for nothing. No, this is on purpose. It's what is called this really rare tense. It's called prophetic past tense. We know we have not been glorified yet. We know there is more coming. But this prophetic past tense, saying that we have been glorified, one commentator put it like this. He said, this is the most bold claim in the entire New Testament. This is so sure that God is going to do what he said he was going to do. That God's plan is going to come to fruition. That Jesus has the power to save. He is so sure of this that he says we have been glorified. That we can look at ourselves and just know the end of the story. We know we will be with God and that we will be glorified with him. We know the ending of the story. And what does all this mean? This hope in Jesus that he's mighty to rescue, mighty to save. And this assurance from God that, and before you could even doubt this, God already made sure it was going to happen. We are unshaken now. We are so unshaken and unfazed by the things of this world, it makes people look at us twice and say, what in the world's wrong with you? This is not the story of my life, guys. God has been wrecking me when I've been reading this. This is not my life. I am so shaken and torn up by the things that go on in this world. I put my hope in so many other things besides Jesus coming back. So many other things. I'm not that adopted orphan who's crying out, yes, Jesus is coming back. My father's coming to save me. I'm the kid who's saying, no, I'm content where I'm at. I don't need any saving. That's what my hope looks like. That's what my life looks like so often, and it hurts. Because I don't want that, man. We can go through anything, anything at all, and be unshaken because our hope is secure in Jesus Christ. And do you know, if I'm being completely honest with you, I don't see it out there either. I see the wrong guy get elected in your mind, and people are freaking out. God is in control. I see somebody hurts your feelings, and all of a sudden the world's gonna end. God is in control. And this gets really personal when it becomes sickness and death and pain. My family member has cancer. I'm telling you, God is in control. He's not doing this because he's cruel. He's doing this because he's good. He's good. Are we singing that and meaning it? Or do we have to wrestle with it over and over again until we make ourselves believe it? He is good. If God shakes everything off of our lives, let it make us look at him and say, you are all I have left. That I've lost everything in this world, but at least it's made me know that I need you. That's where I've been today, man. This is wrecking me. God's preaching this to me. He's saying, you are so consumed by what's going on around you that you don't need me anymore. And I'm looking at him right now saying, I have nothing else. I don't want to be a good preacher. I don't want to be rich. I don't want to have anything from this world. I just want it to all be taken away if it means I know I need you. I have hope in you only. Does God brought you to that place? Do you see your sufferings or the problems of this world as bringing you to that place? That all of these hard things are bringing you to a place where you can say, God, I need you more than ever. Because if you get there, you get it. Jesus is coming back. And if you are hoping in anything else in this world, you are hoping for far too less. If you are shaken by your circumstances and it takes you a while to come back to your senses, you need to ask yourself, what is the greatest hope in your life, man? Because this is indestructible hope. That the God who created the universe sent his son. And if it was his will to kill his own son to adopt you into his family, we can trust that everything else is under his will and that he is a good and loving God who's known us forever. Guys, I don't know really like how else to say it, honestly. What is the greatest hope in your life? This word, I just love this. It's saying the creation has been subjected to futility. That same word futility you see in Ecclesiastes. It's translated the same, vanity of vanities. Meaningless, meaningless, all is meaningless. What we're chasing in this world is going to bring us to despair. It's going to bring us to heartbreak. And when it does, turn to Jesus. Just like an orphan who knows he's been adopted, just say, rescue's coming, man. Rescue is coming. It's all going to be okay. I think you just need to hear that tonight, that it's all going to be okay. So what do we do now? We can be so happy, right? It's heavy, but I think the application just like, we get to be so happy. Think about it, guys. Physically, the clouds will roll back and he'll come back on a white horse, or we'll be laying there on our deathbed and we'll see him. Jesus is coming for us. So I want us to live like that. Happy, uncircumstantial hope, indestructible hope. I want us to sing as if orphans who are just so expectantly waiting a good God who's in control to come save them. Let's pray. God, you are in control, Lord, and it's so, I don't know, it's just so easy to overlook your control and think, oh, how could a good God bring such pain? Lord, and I look at the pain in my life and I look at this passage and I see them coincide and I say, thank God. Thank God that you ripped things away from my life so I could see you more clearly. God, I need more hope from this world to be broken out of my life. I don't get it yet. God, if that means you take whatever you want from me. Take whatever you want in my life. Right now, I want to commit it to you. Just take my reputation. Take anything you want. My approval of man, take it away if it means that I will be more desperate for you and that I will actually raise my hands in worship, not to fit in at Salt, but to be desperate and to say, God, help me. God, rescue me. How long? God, I can't wait. God, I cannot wait to see you face to face when I look at you and all my hope will come true. When you look me in the eyes, when I'm ushered in by your son and you look me in the eyes and you say, well done, my good and faithful servant. God, if we have faith that Jesus is coming back, then those words are for us. So I want you to speak that over everybody here tonight. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Turn your hope away from this world and turn it towards Jesus. God, change our hearts in worship.